behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show. This is Car Stuff. I'm Ben Bolin.
I'm Scott Benjamin.
And Scott, today we have a big event in our show, don't we?
A huge event.
We're not the only ones podcasting today, Scott. We have a very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, How Stuff Works' own Christian Sager. Now, Christian, will you say hello to everybody?
Hey, everybody. Hey, Ben. Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. Thanks for coming. Now, it's always a little bit awkward when we introduce because you do so many things on the website. Scott, this guy writes and hosts Brain Stuff. He does our show What the Stuff, both of which are available on YouTube. Hint, hint, wink, wink. And you have also worked on numerous blogs, and mm-hmm. you and I co-write pretty closely.
Yeah, we work a lot together. Mm-hmm. And I was originally hired to be on Stuff of Genius and
right.
hosted that for about a year and mm-hmm. wrote for the site. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And since day one, we had been talking, the three of us had been talking about, you know, doing something with Car Stuff because, Christian, you also have a little bit of an enthusiasm for certain types of cars, right?
I do, yeah, but I think it's that kind of enthusiasm that you get in your mid-30s when you feel like you need to get, like, a fast car to feel like a man again. And so, yeah, that's where I'm coming from.
That's the genesis of this whole podcast episode,
yeah.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Because, oh, my gosh.
Because, guys, this was, listeners, This is Christian's topic that, you know, you came to us with this
yeah.
and we were so on board because, you know, sometimes we have the moment where we know it's a really good episode if we hear the suggestion and we say, wait, have we not covered that?
And this is true. We have not covered this one specifically.
All right. So
I think, you know, kind of indirectly we've covered it, right?
You have. I went back and looked.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about it a little bit in the muscle cars episode.
Oh, I think you have to talk about muscle cars because there's a strict definition of muscle car, pony car, luxury car, sports car that goes along with all this. And that's going to come up today.
Whoa, hold up. What did you say? Because you said one thing that caught my ear. Did you say pony cars?
Pony cars. That's right. And that was Christian's idea.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is Christian's idea, pony cars. And to start this off, well, we have to ask ourselves where they come from, right?
Yeah. So pony cars are really fascinating to me. I first really became familiar with them through popular culture by just, I'm a big fan of 1970s film, cinema, and television, and pony mm-hmm. cars were everywhere in the early 70s because, well, we'll talk about that later too, but there's a little bit of a partnership between Hollywood and the manufacturers. But yeah, the pony car, the first pony car was the Ford Mustang. So that's where the terminology comes from because it had a literal pony on the logo.
Yeah.
And so any of the imitators basically were referred to as pony cars afterwards.
Exactly right. And that all came about with the change, I guess, of the Ford Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Thunderbird was Ford's halo car back in, 1955, somewhere
right
in there when
yeah,
it first came out.
The two-seater.
Yeah, the two-seat, but it was called a personal luxury car at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then by 1958, the Thunderbird had kind of grown to this larger four-seat vehicle that was no longer, again, like that halo car that they wanted. And
mm-hmm.
and just so we can clear this up, what a halo car really means to a manufacturer, they understand that not everybody is going to be able to afford the halo car or not. They're going to want
right.
to be able to afford the halo car. So they will, you know, it'll bring people into the dealerships, into the showrooms to get them to, you know, to walk in and at least take a look at it and then maybe determine if it's for them or not for them. And the idea is that maybe that customer will then be swayed to purchase a
mm-hmm.
slightly
mm-hmm.
lesser vehicle. And I don't like saying lesser, but it's slightly lesser.
Well, for a topical comparison, you know, walk into the cell phone store because you want the iPhone 6. Oh, it's out of my price range.
You up to mm-hmm. a 6 plus.
Uh-huh.
This will totally date this podcast.
Well, thanks
it
a lot.
Will.
And so here's the other bit of competition that they had going for them. The Chevy Corvair had come out in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
And the Corvair was very popular. Of course, it was kind of an economy car when it first came out.
Sure.
But later they sold what was called the Monza model. And this was a lot more plush. It had a sportier feel to it, sportier look to it. You know, a lot of options that you could add on to this thing, right? So, it was a much better model than the original economy car that they introduced. So Ford needed to do something to keep up in that segment, even though, you know, that segment really wasn't quite a segment yet. They just had to compete with that vehicle because Chevy was selling a bunch of them and Ford is losing sales.
Make no mistake, Ford is in maybe not quite a cutthroat situation, but they see the writing on the wall. This could be a problem. So one thing that we should also point out is, I don't know if we said the specific year, it's the 1964 Mustang.
Right, that was the first one, and it was introduced at the New York World's Fair that year. And so this is, I'm curious about, like, it sounds like we're getting different backstories, Scott. So I heard that the 1964 Ford Mustang was introduced at the New York World's Fair because Ford didn't like the competition from European sports cars. And so they were trying to basically dilute the market by putting out a car that was like a European sports car, but cheaper and more economical.
Ah, see, that fits with, you know, GIs coming back from the war who had seen these smaller sports cars. And we've talked about that history in the past many times, that they loved these little sports cars
the
that they
Jaguar
could buy over
E-type.
There. Exactly right. Cars like that, MG or whatever. But there was also this trend from American manufacturers. And I should say this, that, you know, the I think I started to mention the bucket seats and compact cars with floor-mounted shifters, and some that even had, you know, unheard of at the time, center consoles. So things like that are happening because the bucket seats allow that now, right? And so, you know, Ford, Chrysler, Plymouth, Dodge, American Motors, Studebaker even, they're all building these sporty bucket seat compact cars, and they all have six-cylinder engines with an option to go up to an eight-cylinder. And so this Mustang is fitting perfectly right in there. They have to compete in that segment. And the European angle, I completely understand. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, so like what I had read was that Lee Iacocca and I don't know if it's Donald Fry or Frey, but basically they hatched this idea. And basically it was just, let's put a back seat in a sports car. And put it on the show floor and you know, hopefully dilute the market enough that the Europeans aren't making as much money as we are. But then like, what's interesting is that these things like sold way more than they intended to. They sold like a million in the first 18 months of production.
Yeah, the original sales forecast had said, all right, we'll sell a little bit less than 100,000 units in the first year. 3 months after they start selling these, they've surpassed that number.
Can I tell you how quickly they sold them?
Yeah, please.
The first day that it was on the market. Now, the first day of the 64 Mustang was April 17th, 1964. They sold 22,000 Mustangs on that first day.
Wow.
22,000 out of the projected 100,000 for the entire year. So right away they said, we got to get these things cranking out of the factory.
I was going to say, that's a fifth of their inventory.
Exactly right. So in the end, you know, after the end of that first year, I think it was 1 year. You mentioned an 18-month 18-month cycle.
Yeah,
is that right?
A little bit. So it would be a year and 6 months.
Okay, so a million after that time. The first year, you know, they had projected 100,000. They had sold 618,812 Mustangs that very first year.
Wow. So then they made a little less than half a million of that number in the next 6 months. Here's something that might interest you guys. I know that we're all film fans here, including our super producer, Noel, on the ones and twos, who I always want to give a shout out to. In 1964, this Mustang appeared in a little film called Goldfinger.
Oh, is that
featuring
right?
Featuring James Bond, which I think had a huge effect on sales.
Now, it wasn't a Bond car.
It was not a Bond car. It was just in the film.
A Mustang does not strike me as a Bond
car. No, not at all.
He's
no.
Aston Martin all the way at that point, right? So, so he was a secondary role, right?
It was like a villain's car or something
like a featured car.
That's interesting. So when we talk about Bullet later, I want to come back to that because that's really interesting.
Very good. So let's talk about some of the characteristics of you know, the Mustang and the standards that it set for this class of vehicles.
Okay.
You want to do that?
Yeah.
All right. So, it's kind of a basic outline of what the car had to have. It had to be stylish. Mm-hmm. It had to have kind of a long hood and a short deck, you know, the back end.
Sure.
And it had to have open mouth styling. All this is going to be important later because I'm going to describe a car to you that's going to surprise you when I mention it. All right. So, this open mouth styling had to have an affordable base price, which at the time was considered to be under $2,500. And that was, in 1965.
Can you imagine?
You know what that is now?
All right. Let's have the inflation calculator.
Just under $19,000 in 2014.
That is almost comparable with what they're selling for now, I think, right?
I think it's pretty darn close.
It's pretty close.
I really do. But that's still not the price of the average sedan, as we've talked about many times, which is like $32,300.
Oh, yeah. When you go to rent one of these things, it is not considered the economy vehicle.
That's true. Yeah. You're getting the SS models, the RS models, the upsell, right?
They definitely try to upgrade with these. Yeah, that's the appeal.
And we've got to, everybody, remember that we mentioned that because we're going to get back to renting those later on in the show.
Absolutely. And you know what? There's a few more characteristics that I think we should talk about because they're important for the overall picture of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have what they call off-the-shelf mass production components. So, you know, they can just crank these things out one after the other.
Mm-hmm. And part of that is, you know, part of this is so that the car owner has the ability to fix and or modify the car themselves.
Yeah, like the modifications are hugely important, and especially for them to be able to sell premium models as well.
Exactly right. And those options are very lucrative for the company.
And
that's the whole point behind it. It's like, well, sure, I'll take that, but it's only $500 more to upgrade to the V8. Why not? Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, V6 or V8 engine, as we mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how would you feel in the dealership when they say, well, you know, we could get a V6. I guess we could order a V6 for you and you could wait a few weeks. We have this V8 over here. I mean, it's your choice.
And I need to say something, though, about the V8s, because they had, you know, back then, you got to remember the time. They had what they called ordinary V8s, and then they had kind of the high-performance V8s.
Mm-hmm.
And the high-performance V8s would push these cars, that even though they were pony car bodies and pony car options to begin with, if you bought the bigger version, it kind of pushed it into the muscle car range.
Right, yeah. And so that's interesting, too, is that, like, there's this muscle cars and pony cars aren't mutually exclusive. There's sort of an overlap, like a Venn diagram of the two.
Correct. Yeah, exactly right. And there's just a couple more things, and then I'll be done, I promise.
Yeah.
And I'll just list these quickly.
Yeah.
Rear-wheel drive. Have to be rear-wheel drive.
Yep, no exceptions.
Have to have two doors.
Mm-hmm.
Has to have, like that open mouth. I think I mentioned that already, didn't I?
Yeah.
Open mouth, that very wide open front end, so lots of air can get through there. It's just a design characteristic that we've come to expect out of these things. Also, most of them have V6 power. I mean, I know we just mentioned the V8 thing, but most of them, the standard option or the standard equipment would be the V6, and then you could upgrade from there, and that was all part of the auto manufacturer's way to get money, because I mean, you go in and then you start upping the ante a little bit.
Sure.
I love that that Hurst shifter, why don't you put that in as well, and that's another $75 at the time or whatever it was.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, it adds up.
And then they even had we'll talk about this a little bit later, but they had models for each of these too, you know, the SS, the RT, the GT for the Mustang.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Christian, you raised a point. I think we were talking about off air, another very important part of the definition of pony cars.
Yeah, they have to be American made. So you could have all of these specs made on a European car, but by the cultural standards by which we measure pony cars in the good old US of A, you know, it wouldn't count.
No.
That's a classic pony car, though.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder. Now, we'll talk about this. This is maybe hinting towards what I'm getting.
Well, I got one for you.
We're close to it. Yeah.
So let's look at the 2015 Mustang model just briefly.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Does it qualify as a pony car? It's a $23,000 car.
Mm-hmm.
It has between 310 and 435 horsepower. There's several equipable models. It has all of those aesthetic qualifications that we mentioned, two-door, four seats, long hood, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it has what's called a line lock, and I was unfamiliar with this until I was doing the research for this episode. Have you heard of these before?
I have. I don't. You know what line lock is?
I've read about them. I've never used one.
Okay.
So this is what I read. It applies to the front brakes, but not your rear brakes. So you can do burnouts to warm up the rear tires for the maximum amount of traction for starting.
This is essential.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why you'll buy a car without that now.
Yeah.
Because we were at that car show actually earlier, and we saw people trying to really punch it, but they were on cold tires because they had been sitting there for a while. There were a couple guys who knew what they were doing who were burning out just a bit.
Yeah.
But,
well, look at drag racing. That's what it's about.
Right.
I mean, you heat up the tires, you create a surface for the rubber to grab onto, which is the hot rubber that you just laid on the track. So that's kind of the idea. I mean, I understand this whole cold tires thing and line lock. That's a cool way to do it.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
And here we are, start accelerating slowly from our parking spaces like a bunch of rubes.
Yeah. Well, I've told you many times, I never get out of second gear on the way home.
It's like oh, that's Atlanta.
It's like 16 miles away, and I drive first and second gear the whole way.
Yeah.
So frustrating.
But is it
a muscle? Is it a pony car?
Mustang still a pony car?
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah. You know, there's three cars that you would call, I guess, the usual suspects right
now
that, that most people can point to as being modern versions of the pony car, rather. And that would be the Ford Mustang that you mentioned. And I think that this comes down to the line around, what was it, 2005, when they did the redesign with the retro look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everybody can remember that exactly when it came out, because that was something really unusual for an automaker to do, is to revert back to a design that looks clearly out of the 1960s. And they're bringing it back in a modern version. And
especially
and then,
with the Mustangs, because the Mustang of the pony cars, all of them, it's the only one, as I understand it, that's been in continuous production since the 60s. They stopped production on some of the other ones.
That's true.
Absolutely right, because then not long after that, you know, in 2008, Dodge came out with the Challenger.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge hit.
Yeah.
It still is.
Yep.
And the Chevy Camaro in 2010. So they followed right along with Ford because they realized just how many of these vehicles Ford was selling.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know what? I'm just going to do it now. I'm going to tell you my surprise right now. There's another car that is in kind of possible contention.
What?
For a, it's just a rumor that's kind of going around.
A contender to the throne of pony cardom?
Maybe. There might be another option here that we're not thinking of.
Noel, may we have a drum roll, please?
Now, this is going to surprise you, but I'm going to say that there's a chance that that Hyundai's next Genesis Coupe may be considered a pony car. Now, I know what you said about being built in the U.S., but I'm going to show you two here a photo of this car. Take a look at that, and you decide if you think that looks an awful lot like what we call a modern pony car right now.
Yeah, for sure. The aesthetic design of the front of
it's definitely going for that. It totally is. Now, listeners, if you want to look this up, I found this in an article, and I'll let you in on what it is. It's a rendering from an artist who has taken two designs and melded them together to create this vehicle.
Okay.
But it makes sense when I tell you why he did it. And, the article is from a place called Car Scoops, and the title is Future Cars, visually musing Hyundai's next Genesis Coupe. And the idea might not be as crazy as you might think, because the design is based on a concept vehicle from Hyundai called the HND9 concept. And the HND9 is kind of a far out there concept design with butterfly doors, and but it does have what may be the next generation engine that's going to be put into the Genesis Coupe. So all this combined, you have to take design elements from that vehicle, mix them with the current or the proposed next Genesis Coupe, which I think is already sharp looking. It's a cool car.
Yeah.
It's very possible. I mean, this will be a rear-wheel drive.
Okay.
V6 power.
Check.
Okay.
Two doors. Open mouth front end, as you can see from this photo.
Yeah.
I mean, it has the look of, it's getting close to what a 2015 Mustang is going to look like.
Do they have an asking price for it?
They do not, because this is a melding of two designs. Now,
still purely brainstorming.
Exactly right. Now, the engine that I mentioned would be a 3.3 liter turbocharged V6, and it has 362 horsepower and an 8-speed automatic transmission driving, again, rear wheels. So, it does have rear wheel drive. The current Genesis Coupe already has, a 3.8 liter V6 that has something like 348 horsepower.
Uh-huh.
Now you can get a 2-liter engine that has like 275 or something like that, but we're not talking about that one right now.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to make a V8 option available, this would make it like something almost exactly like what we consider the definition of a pony car.
I wonder how upgradable it would be, though.
Well, that's the thing with the V8.
Yeah.
And I wonder about, of course it has bucket seats. It has, its own, center console, of course. It has a raked windshield, just like, I guess the Mustang does, right? I mean, it looks very similar in design to me, like the 2015 Mustang.
I mean, I would hazard that it would have a suite of packages.
Yeah, you would think,
I think that idea's got legs.
Trying to compete, yeah.
Right. It's clearly, from what you're showing us, Scott, this is clearly something intended to compete in the same space. And, maybe the definition of pony car will change for some people, but if you guys out there listening, if you're familiar with pony car fandom at all, then you know that they're not the biggest fans of change.
Yeah, there's going to be some resistance to this idea. Sure. I understand that. And this is really just someone kind of floating the idea out there. So
I would be surprised if they actually tried to call it a pony car.
Ah,
but it was just
go.
More like mm-hmm. that they were selling a car that looked like that on the lot that was maybe $1,000 or $2,000 cheaper.
But I want to point something out. I'm not the first one to say this. Yeah. If you search for articles about the current Hyundai Genesis Coupe and this that I'm mentioning specifically, the words pony car appear in the article. I mean, and people are talking about it in the comment sections. Like, you know, if you build this with a V8, I'll take one. And, you know, as far as calling it a pony car, I know there'll be resistance. I know people will say, no, that's an American made car. And that's just the definition. That's the way it is.
Right. Yeah.
It has been, you know, that way for 45 years. Now.
Well, doesn't Hyundai have, some factories here in the U.S.? So wouldn't that technically be an American made car? I'm being pedantic.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Technically.
Yeah.
Save it for the YouTube comments.
Oh, shots fired. Well, that is fascinating because this is actually the first I have heard about this vehicle, and I hope to hear more about it. But while we're talking about specific vehicles, one thing we also wanted to do was to talk about some of our favorite pony cars. So, Christian, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, absolutely. If we're talking about classics, I am a fan of the 1970 Dodge Challenger RT440 Magnum, which is the car that they used in Vanishing Point. and which is really where I kind of first started. They did a showing of Vanishing Point maybe like 5 or 6 years ago at, there's a small cinema in town called Cinefest. Uh-huh. And I got to see it on the big screen and it was just like, I want one of those.
Big difference.
Yeah. And then they, I don't know if you guys remember, but when they came out with the Grindhouse movie, that Quentin Tarantino and, Rodriguez did together, they used that same car in Tarantino's Death Proof, basically calling it out, saying like within the plot of the movie, saying that these were stunt drivers and they loved that car from Vanishing Point and they wanted to get a hold of one of those and do some stunts with it.
Oh, no kidding.
So that's like the center of the plot is them trying to find a white 1970 Dodge Challenger to do these tricks with.
What did stuntman Mike end up driving? What was that? A Nova? What was that?
I can't remember what he had.
I can't remember either, but what a cool movie. Yeah. What a cool car.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so that's your favorite.
Yeah, I like that one.
All right.
I haven't driven it yet, though, but I'm sure it would be beautiful.
What about you, Scott?
I'm going to go with the Mustang that was used in the film Bullet. I think that's probably my favorite design.
The fastback?
Yeah, the Steve McQueen fastback. Just an amazing chase scene. I don't know if really anything compares for me, anyways, as far as a classic design goes. Ben, what's your favorite?
You know, I am going to, for entirely shallow reasons, go with the 1982 Pontiac Trans Am Firebird.
Ooh.
An 82?
Because it's kit, you
it's
guys.
Kit. Yeah.
It's really? Knight Rider.
Oh, that's right.
So that was, I did want to talk about this.
Yeah.
So it is technically a pony car. What we generally understand for classic pony cars is that like production basically like waned around like 71, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did keep making cars that fit the bill. But like we talked about earlier, Mustang was the only one that was in continuous production. But yeah, kit.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, having an AI robot inside of it.
I'll admit that's part of the selling point when I'm thinking of favorites. But we
counts
should also
as a pony car.
Yeah. Well, very technically. And you raised a really interesting point here because, for people wondering about the phrase Trans Am, I think a lot of people may not know that started out as a series first, right? A race.
Sure. Yeah. It's just a competition between manufacturers and the Trans Am series, right? I mean, that was a series that was popular in the late 60s, early 1970s. And they even called it what? They had a term for it. During that time, they called it the Pony Car Wars.
Right.
Oh, really?
Between certain years, because that was really all that was competing were just pony cars on the track. And how cool would that have been to see, pony cars battling it out on road tracks all over the U.S. because this series went everywhere.
And this is not an advertisement, but there's a book that I want to give a shout out to that I think listeners might enjoy. If you guys want to learn more about this, there's a book by a guy called Dave Friedman. He's called Dave Friedman probably because that's his name.
Okay. It's not because he's a Friedman.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Spot on. The title is Trans Am, the Pony Car Wars, 1966 to 1971. So this is a look at how these, how these manufacturers started really butting heads in this and how Trans Am became in some ways a proving ground for these vehicles.
That competition hasn't waned because they're still competing on the track.
Right.
As far as, and you mentioned this to me earlier on, the NASCAR Nationwide Series, right?
Yeah, which they, apparently this series is also called the Cars of Tomorrow, which I think is funny because most of them are pony car remodels.
That is, well, the Car of Tomorrow was a design change for NASCAR. They, updated the vehicle design to be safer and to have greater aerodynamics and, you know, different ways for NASCAR to measure things.
Gotcha.
In order
they
to...
were more like safety regulations.
Correct. Exactly okay. Right. So the Car of Tomorrow is more of a design, I think, than anything else. But there are pony cars that compete in the Nationwide Series, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have Dodge Challengers. It started in 2010. Mm-hmm. The Mustang was in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
The Pontiac GTO in 2008. I don't think I've seen one of those.
You know
before.
What? I was working at General Motors for about a year doing technical writing.
Uh-huh.
And this is when the GTO hit.
Okay.
And it was the, you know, like the rebirth of the GTO from way back, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And when it came out, I mean, I'll tell you, like, personally, I didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I really didn't. They had a really cool looking concept vehicle, had a Coke bottle design. It was really interesting to look at. Mm-hmm. You know, it made the auto show circuit and you get up close and personal and look at it and looked really interesting. But then when the concept or when the production model came out, it was this very smooth, it's a big two-door V8 power, very strong.
Mm.
But I think it only had something like 350 horsepower. At the time, that was pretty strong, I guess, for
sure.
Back then, you know, 2008. Things have really upped recently. And then they started coming out with, you know, the 400 horsepower version and they started upping it. But, I'll tell you that to me personally, the body style of the GTO was kind of a letdown when I saw it.
And did it meet like what we would think of as qualifications for a pony car?
It did. It did. It really did. I mean, and they're correct in calling it that, but, it's kind of like the forgotten one, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're definitely not building the Pontiac GTO anymore. But, you know, it debuted in the series in 2008 and that was after it had already debuted in showrooms. I mean, I think it had been around since, what, 2003, maybe? Is that right? Somewhere around there?
I'd say, 2003, 2004.
And you'll still see them on the road occasionally. And they are very strong, and they just don't have the, I guess, the sex appeal, I guess you'd say, of the Challenger, the Mustang, and the Camaro.
Right, yeah, the trinity of the pony cars. It's funny because I was checking out some ratings, and I think it was Motor Trends. It may have been, it was Motor Trend. They had a few of their writers, they had six of their writers rate all muscle cars and give their top, their top marks. And, when they were rating it, I mean, surprise, everybody can guess number one, it's the Mustang GT.
Yeah.
Across the board, no exceptions. And then it's between the Challenger and the Genesis for number two spot.
Huh. Really?
Isn't that weird?
So there you go, the Hyundai Genesis Coupe again.
So they're counting it.
You know, can I just say one quick thing? I wonder if, I'm sorry, am I interrupting?
No.
I wonder if Pontiac was still around, if they would still be building the GTO, and if they would have gone back to the throwback design like
right.
Ford did and like Chrysler
Ultimately,
did.
Ultimately, they would have, yeah.
I think that they might have.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll never know. It's one of those things that is just, it's gone.
Oh, you guys, we missed a big part that we have to tell listeners about. So, Christian, you had earlier said, you know, we were talking about the classic period, right?
Right.
And how while my choice of the 1982, car is, of kit, really, is technically correct, but not in that golden era, because something happened to cause the wane of that golden era, right?
And, they really started to lose their appeal after a while. I mean, there were other cars like the Pontiac Firebird, the AMC Javelin, which I like those AMC Javelins the way they look. They're kind of cool too.
But, right.
And the Plymouth Barracuda, those were all like kind of the lower, like, I guess, second tier pony cars that were coming out. But then, by 71, economy imports and the industry was really focusing on making smaller cars, like the ones that we joke about nowadays, like an AMC Gremlin or
Ford
Pinto or whatever.
Well, there were Cricket.
Yeah. Well, there were gas concerns. The right. cost of gasoline was becoming a major factor for a lot of people.
That's
but
true.
Those kind of put pony cars out of business.
But
for
you know,
a while.
But you know what thing that one thing that these were providing a greater value to the manufacturer than they knew at the time, I think, because what these had done since, you know, from 1964 all the way through 1972, somewhere in there, 71?
Yeah, 71, 72, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What they were doing was they were building brand loyalty with their customers because customers love these things and they love to, you know, kind of puff out their chest and say, you know, my Ford can beat your Chevy, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And this is kind of interesting. In 1970, Car and Driver did this report that said, well, very few pony car drivers would buy a second pony car, which is kind of strange.
You know, interesting.
It did, however, prompt them, you know, 50% of them anyway, to purchase another model from the same manufacturer. So they may have stepped up. You know, they may have decided that, you know, I really like this pony car. It had a lot of options and everything, but I'm going to go one level higher next time. I'm not going to get another
in life.
Yeah, doing a little better. That's exactly right. You know, I think, you know, the economy was, well, I'm not going to comment on the economy, but, you know, the idea was that I'm growing up. I'm going to get something a little different, maybe a luxury car from the same manufacturer. And it prompted half of the owners of pony cars to do that.
That's interesting, especially when I think about, I wonder what happened. I mean, we know they're for sale, but like, if we're talking about 1 million Ford Mustangs that were made in the first 18 months. That's a lot of 64 Mustangs that are out there.
And
that's true.
Think about this. How many of those, you know, people that bought that original Mustang in 2005 got very excited and said, I'm going to buy another one of those because this is my childhood.
Hundreds of thousands.
Exactly. You know, I mean, not my childhood, I guess my formative years, you know, this is the car that I had in high school. I'm going to get it now that I'm nearly retired.
Drive it off on my last day of work.
Brand loyalty.
64 Mustang goes for.
Ooh. Oh, there are a lot of factors at play. I would say number one being mileage.
Yeah.
But if it's
more than $2,500.
More than 2015.
Yeah, gonna go ahead and say, guys, if you have a drivable 1964 Mustang that you had paid for, that you got from someone in your family, keep it, hold on to it, and take care of it.
And the thing
you could give it to me.
You know,
you could give it to Christian.
We see them all the time.
You'll let me borrow it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so I wanted to ask you guys about this.
Yeah,
Atlanta, where we live and where we work, seems to me to be a pony car hub. In a way, because like I'm from New England originally, and I didn't really see Mustangs and Challengers as much as I see since I've been living here. They're everywhere. And I just realized the other day that right around the block from my house is a Mustang exclusive vintage garage shop.
Yep.
So that explains part of it for me, at least.
Sure, the traffic.
But I'm seeing like all these cool, you know, older Mustang.
You need to see them on the interstate, too.
You need to take a trip to Detroit, my friend, because you wouldn't believe the amount of cars up there. I mean, right here around this area, I seem to see more.
We see a lot of luxury cars up here.
Foreign makes, exotics, things like that around here compared to up there where it's all American, typically. You know, it's like the opposite of what's down here. You know, for every foreign make we see on the road here, it would be an American make up there.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, rightfully so, that's the people that are building them, right? But, or creating them. But I would have to believe that now the roads must be just jammed with pony cars now because of, you know, these three models that are available. People love them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you're saying is that if I'm in the market to get one of these, I should go to Michigan.
Possibly. Yeah. Because there may be a flooded market there.
There's a glut. Yeah.
But you know what? Maybe this is a good time to talk about this because you have driven one, right?
I have.
Yes.
You've driven a pony car and it made a big impression on you.
It did. Yeah. So, like I said earlier, like I got kind of fascinated with these cars from Vanishing Point and then Bullet and then the other big one. So we'll talk about this. The French Connection, I don't know if that counts as a pony car. Mm. But anyways, the French Connection's still an awesome car chase 1970s movie.
Right.
So, a couple years ago, my sister got married about an hour west of Dallas, Texas. It was really in the middle of nowhere. And I said to my wife, let's make some fun out of this. And we rented a Ford Mustang. It was like a 2011 red with white racing stripes. Mm-hmm. And, so I showed up blazing my sister's wedding in this Mustang. And it was, her wedding was at this like reserve sort of that was, a lot of like dirt and tumbleweeds, kind of what you would think of like, you know, Flatlands, Texas. Mm-hmm. And man, it was so much fun just driving that thing around on flat dirt roads and kicking up dust everywhere.
And this prompted a conversation between you and I that I've mentioned on this podcast before.
Oh, really?
As soon as you said it, I was actually pretty excited about the idea, that you said, you know, I really enjoyed driving that, that Mustang. You weren't sure if you'd buy one. Maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't.
If I wasn't married, I'd probably buy one.
Really? Okay. You mentioned that and then you said, well, I wonder what it's like to drive the other pony cars that are out there, like the Challenger or the Camaro.
Right.
And I said, you know what? You rented the Mustang. If you really wanted to, you could rent the Challenger. You could rent the Camaro and drive them for a day, even locally, even if you're not on a trip somewhere.
Yeah.
Just go locally, rent one, try it out. And it's, maybe, you know, it's a lot less pressure than going to a dealership.
Absolutely.
And, you know, having them let you test drive it for 15 minutes or whatever they do, or even a day, I guess. But still, it's less pressure because when you return it, they don't really care. They just want, you know, the keys back. That's all.
Yeah. But like you said, the problem with Atlanta is that you got to keep it in second gear the whole time.
You have to rent in northern Georgia and then take it up into the hills and really have fun.
Yeah, that would be great.
It would be a lot of fun. But I thought that was a fantastic idea that you had.
Yeah. So I pitched that. The next time we went to go rent a car, my wife, first of all, she didn't like the handle of the Mustang herself. And she respects the idea that I'm into these cars and everything, that I'm having a midlife crisis, but, she's more practical. And so, we actually bought a new car a couple months ago and we ended up going with a 2011, Toyota RAV4. Which is a very nice, practical car. Mm-hmm. But I was like, hey, look, there's some Dodge Challengers over there for the same price. Yeah,
they have a back seat. So.
Yeah. Just getting this picture. Remember Walter White in Breaking Bad when he showed up? He would show up in those Challengers just kind of like it. I don't know. It wasn't indiscriminately or anything. It was like when he was feeling really all puffed up and full of himself.
Yeah, a little like a BA.
I don't think this is too much of a Breaking Bad spoiler, but there's a scene, I think, where he just like splurges, buys a red Dodge Challenger and then like spins it out and sets it on fire.
He blows it up. Yeah. And then he bought one for his son.
Right.
Which was then returned.
And then later he
bought one for his son and he had one.
So it reoccurs
throughout the series.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme. Yeah. We should point out, for anyone who hasn't seen Breaking Bad, I'm just going to go ahead and give the easiest spoiler here. He starts, you guys remember what he starts the story with, right? An Aztec, I think?
Yeah. He drives an Aztec for a long time in the series. And so I am also, I kind of like Aztecs. I know a lot of people don't.
Whoa.
And that's one of those, like I'll see him on the road and I'm like, oh, there's Walter White's
that is
car.
A controversial thing to say on this show.
Yeah, I bet
okay, while we're talking about these, I need to just throw this out there.
Throw it out.
We should do the cars of Breaking Bad.
That would be cool,
an episode because there's several in there. I mean, there's some piles of crap, but there's also some fantastic cars.
Yeah,
that's a really good point.
And no spoilers here, but I think the car in the very last scene with Jesse. I think that might be a cool car too. I can't remember.
El Camino that he drove away.
Is that an El Camino?
Also, oh boy, I'm blowing everything. Yeah. Right? So I hope people have watched it. It's long off the air anyway.
Yeah, but,
also the Cadillac where the gun was mounted.
That was, man. Now we're turning it into a little bit of Breaking Bad podcast. That's a great idea though.
Okay. And Ben.
Yes.
Do you have any experience with pony cars? Have any of your friends had one? Have you owned one? I know your family owned a lot of cars.
Well, yeah. So when I was just getting out of high school a few years back, one of my old high school buddies, I say this without a trace of bitterness, if you're listening, Matthew, you were very lucky because your parents bought you a car like every year.
Oh.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys. And
I think we all know someone like
that. Yeah, and he got this Mustang. And he didn't tell me or my best friend at the time. Instead, he says, hey, you guys, where are you hanging out? And we were at my house at the time. And he says, okay, cool. I'll be there in a second. And then we hear this thing that, you know, pardon my French, Noel. I hope I can say this on the air. It's like a bat out of hell just screaming up our street. And there's a very long street in the subdivision. And then, and this was totally unnecessary, he does like the handbrake.
Yeah.
To get like to stop.
Is there any other way, Ben?
Right.
We're standing in the yard. You guys sitting in lawn chairs.
That's awesome.
We were doing nothing with our lives that afternoon. And so I was so impressed when he did that. He squealed out and he popped the handbrake and he just looked at us and he bought some aviators, by the way.
Cool.
And he said, get in. We like jumped in and then I wish we did something epic, but we went to the mall.
This is like a scene out of a movie.
It was really cool. Need to go like jump a bridge.
Yeah,
or
that's cool.
I know. I felt unprepared. I was also wearing flip flops. This was not, this is not a shining Ben Bolin moment for sure.
Gosh.
But we got to, you know, of course, since we're friends, we got to drive it. And I was impressed because, you know, the kind of cars that I've been driving for a long time are more land yachts. So they don't have that kind of pickup. And, it's a mean machine on the road.
And you know, what I noticed too is, yeah, of course it, like, it's very fast and,
yeah,
and feels, it, you know, it feels thunderous as you're driving.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of control to the Mustang that I drove too. I felt like it was very controllable. Mm-hmm. I mean, even more so maybe than my RAV4 that I have now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've never driven a RAV4, so I can't speak to it. Although the one thing that creeps me out about those things is, you and I were talking about this off air when we were doing a brain stuff.
Yeah.
Shoot. They're kind of bigger on the inside than they should be.
They're like a weird TARDIS thing. Like you get inside and you're like, wait a minute, like, where did all this extra room come from?
Uh-huh.
Like, I could move into it.
I swear there wasn't a bedroom and a living room when I bought this.
My wife's Honda Element is the exact same way. You get inside,
yeah,
it's like you're in a school bus suddenly. Very strange. You've got 2 feet of headroom, which is weird.
Yeah.
You don't get it.
After driving a Honda Civic for the last, like 7 years, having that much headroom is a big deal.
All right. I'm uncomfortable mentioning, you know, Honda Elements and RAV4s in a pony car podcast.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So Scott, come on. You must have driven a pony car.
I owned, that was my first car. But here's the technicality. Mine had the 400 engine, which is the 6.6 liter, as a big block, and that officially, as I found out from this chart that I just looked at,
it
just pushed it into the muscle car. If I had the 350 version, or the lesser V8, or the ordinary V8, I guess, it would be a pony car. Yes,
okay.
It was a 78 Trans Am, and you know, all those vehicles, the Firebird Trans Am series, all those were pony cars.
Mm-hmm.
The first car that I ever, I guess. Was in that went over 100 that I remember, was my uncle's. We were going fishing somewhere in Indiana, you know, like back roads, country roads. And it was in a first gen Barracuda, Plymouth Barracuda.
Oh, nice.
You know, that that long back window.
Yeah.
Beautiful design. I like the first gen and I like the third gen of the Barracuda. I'm not crazy about that second generation, but that's probably my first pony car experience was in that one. Because I was young, you know, at the time. I was visiting in Indiana, we decided to go fishing on a weekend. But as far as, like owning one of these things again, if I were to buy one, I think I might, I really do like that first gen Camaro, the Trans Am Firebird, you know, that whole line.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I really, really like that a lot. They only built it for a couple of years from 67 to 69, but, the design to me is one of the most classic pony car designs. Mm. I know that, you know, the Mustang was the original, but, I'm more of a Camaro fan, I guess.
Yeah. The Camaros, I mean, I don't have any numbers to back this up, but I feel like the new Camaros are maybe the more successful of the pony cars now.
And I'll tell you, between the modern ones, I think, you know, the three that we consider the modern pony cars.
Sure.
I think that my favorite design is the Chevy Camaro SS or the R, you know, the, what am I thinking of? The ZL1 version of the whole thing. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I got to give it to the Mustang for the sound. When I hear a new Mustang,
right.
I don't know what engine exhaust combination it is, but man, do they sound good.
And you can tell it's a Mustang if you listen.
You really can. I mean, it's
which
very
is,
distinctive.
Which is
so
weird.
Car stuff listeners are probably already familiar with this, but I actually had to go look this up. I was like, what's GT stand for? What's SS stand for? And what's RT stand for? So you guys probably know this. GT's Gran Turismo, Grand Touring. The Challenger RT is road/track, not road and track. And then the SS is the Super Sport.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's
but
the
that's not just for Camaros. It's all Chevys. They had Impala SSs.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. They had, Impalas, and they even had some pickup trucks, I think, that used the SS for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. They used it when they put that 454 engine that they had for a long time.
Okay.
It would be called the SS version of whatever it was. And it wasn't just that one. But SS showed up in a lot of places, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I have to ask you guys a question. So we have talked about the origin of pony cars, the genesis of pony cars, and we've talked a little bit about pony cars in the modern day, including some foreign competitors. But my question now is, what do you guys think is the future of pony cars? Do you think we'll see a continued growth? Are we going to see another pattern of you know, for lack of a better word, gritty reboots because they just started, you know, returning to some of those original inspirations. So I'm interested to see what you guys think. Pony cars, 20 years. Give me your best bets.
I mean, just from my experience in Atlanta, and like I was saying earlier, like seeing so many of them, I think that they're at a height of popularity again. I'd be surprised if Challenger or the Mustang obviously probably won't go out of production, but I'd be surprised if the Challenger or the Camaro went out of production in the next 10 years.
Oh, I think they're going to hang around as well. But yeah. I just wish that, like, I wish Plymouth were around to come out with a new Barracuda.
Sure.
I wish that Pontiac was still around to come out with, you know, a new GTO. I just wish that there was, you know, more possibility for this. Because
so
the cars
somebody
that
owns the rights to those names / designs?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's still out. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work because the division is just gone.
Right.
They're not producing anything. But I wonder if they could rebirth those things. Yeah. I don't know. But what about companies like AMC that had, you know, the Javelin that you mentioned?
Ooh.
I had a friend in high school that had a Javelin. It was a great looking car.
Yeah.
But can you imagine a modern version of that? That'd be really cool.
Yeah, it would be.
But it's impossible because AMC's long gone. I mean, it's just not possible. So I wish that there was more room for competition with other manufacturers in the game other than just these three.
Well, we'll see that in the future clearly, but they may not be American companies.
That's true.
Which goes into, you know, the rise of the new manufacturing bases is something that we have touched on in other podcasts, right?
It's like a Transformers movie title when you get the Hyundai Genesis in there.
That's
the
true.
Rise of the Genesis.
You see, I still think it's just going to be too controversial for people to actually call a foreign-made vehicle, foreign to the United States, I should say, to call that a pony car. Because
you might
think
see them sell really well in foreign markets.
I bet they will, but they're not going to call them pony cars in Europe.
Yeah, that's
I don't
true.
Think that they will.
Mm.
I don't know if they even call, you know, the cars that we import over there pony cars or not.
So this actually, I was telling you guys a little bit about this off air. I assumed, you know, I'm a fan of watching like shows like Top Gear.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed those guys must have at some point done like a pony car race on their show. And when I looked it up, all I could find was that there was I didn't know this. There's an American version of Top Gear.
Yep.
I don't have cable. Sorry, guys. And, and then that in the American version, they did do a pony car race where they raced classic versions of the Challenger, Mustang, and Camaro, and then they stopped, got out, and jumped in the modern versions, and then raced those down to the end of the track.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, it was fun, and they did it in the basin of the LA River, you know, that kind of classic, there's a scene in Drive, actually, where Ryan Gosling's driving a Mustang through there.
I think there's a few movies shot there, right?
Yeah.
And, and you can picture it probably that great big wide basin that has the sloped concrete walls.
Right.
Yeah, for all the runoff water, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And even like in this video, you can find it on YouTube pretty easily. There was still water in there. It hadn't fully drained out. So they had to like be careful as they're racing around to not like fly into the water. Mm-hmm.
Probably all mossy and slick. Yeah, that's cool. I'm going to take a look at that one.
And in that race, which was by no means like refereed in any way, the Camaro came out ahead.
Really?
Yeah. The thing was the classic, when you watch it, the classic Challenger has a ton of power comparatively in it, and it got way ahead.
Uh-huh.
The brakes weren't as good, so the guy in the Challenger had to brake like super early so he didn't hit the new Challenger.
Oh.
And then they jump in and the new Camaro just blew him away.
I see.
Yeah.
Huh. You know what? Maybe we can talk with the powers that be over here at How Stuff Works and see if we can negotiate a car race.
You know what? There's three of us.
Yeah.
There's
the Camaro, the Challenger, the Mustang.
We can do the 285 loop, just fly around it.
Yeah. Why not?
This is a fantastic idea. I think it has legs.
This is literally the best idea we've ever had.
It maybe is. I mean, this would be fantastic. So, and we're always trying to do new videos, right?
Ford, Chevrolet, Dodge, if you're out there and you're listening.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'll take a Challenger. Hey, Noel, would you be down with the Hyundai? Okay, I've got on a 1 to 10, he looked like that was a pretty, pretty solid 4.5.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a 3.0. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So, listeners, we hope that you guys have enjoyed checking out our Pony Car podcast as much as we enjoyed making it, though that's a tall order for sure. Christian, thank you so much for coming on our show. We hope to have you back. And in the meantime, where can people find more of your work here at House of Works?
Well, you can find me on BrainStuff, which is brainstuffshow.com. That's where our site hosts all of our blogs and videos.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our older material that I've done is on the Stuff of Genius site. But the newest stuff that we're working on, Ben and I are working on together, actually, is on the How Stuff Works channel on YouTube. You'll be able to find a lot of content that we've created there.
Yeah, and let's also keep in mind that if you are a fan of some of our other podcasts, Tech Stuff, for instance, they can also find some episodes that you've hosted, Christian, and that I think you've hosted an episode, Scott.
I have.
Yeah, and me as well. So, listeners, maybe at this point your question is, these guys said something about pony cars that just got stuck in my craw and someone needs to know. How do I talk to these jabronis? Well, the answer is simple. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter where we are CarStuffHSW. You can check out one of our more than 600 podcasts on our website, CarStuffShow.com. And if you want to send us a letter with a suggestion for a future topic or just some feedback or just some pictures of a cool car, we don't even care if you own it, honestly. I mean, don't steal it. Don't steal a car and take a picture of it. That's illegal. I'm making this too long.
Well, and stupid.
And stupid.
No,
and
not that you're making it stupid. I mean, that would be stupid to take
just
a picture
as long as
of it stolen.
In 6 seconds.
Yeah. There we go.
Very clever.
So tell us all about it. You can email us directly. Our address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.